105.9 Academy FM.
BizConnect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the BizConnect, a radio show with myself, Martin White, and as always, a studio packed full of guests today. We'll ask them to introduce themselves in a minute, but I just wanted to take a moment or so to reflect on what have been three fabulous years for us at Academy FM Folkestone, on the station, broadcasting bi-weekly with our super business show guests. Sadly, we are moving on. So after 60-odd shows, including during COVID distancing, where we had interviews with our guests on the telephone, over 100 guests in total, we're going to be moving on to a new station this summer. So, in slightly reflective mood today, but do keep in touch with us at kentbizconnect.co.uk. Find out where we ultimately are going to be broadcasting from, and keep up to date with all our news and next guests on our website. But without further ado, I would like our guests to introduce themselves today. I'm going to hand over right now, actually. To my right, we have...
Good afternoon, Steve Walker, Chairman of Walker Construction.
Steve, lovely to have you with us in the studio today. In the centre,
we have Chris Wilson. I'm the Contracts Manager at Syncline Solutions.
Chris, lovely to see you. And to my left,
it's Pamela Branch. I'm also from Walker Construction, and I'm the Human Resources Manager.
Brilliant, fantastic. So, needless to say, we're going to be talking about local construction matters today. Walkers are obviously a local firm. Chris, you're based up the road in Hythe as well, aren't you? So, a very local feel to the show today. Do stay with us. When we come back, we're going to have a chat with Steve. Join us after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect.
The show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in to the BizConnect radio show today. Our last show on Academy FM 105.9. We'll be moving to a new station this summer. But we do have three super guests with us who we'd like to talk to before we close out today. And I think we'd like to start with you, Steve Walker, if we can. Steve Walker from Walker Construction. Steve, tell us all about your company. Obviously, it bears your name. So perhaps give us a little intro to how you started, who you are, and what you do ultimately, please.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, the company was founded in 1964 by my father and his two brothers. So we're coming up celebrating 59 years next month, which is quite an achievement for any company in this day and age, particularly in construction. Currently, we operate out of Lyme. We employ 170 staff. We've got a turnover of around 50 million a year. And we operate in three core divisions, which is civil engineering, building and rail. And they are split pretty much equally, a third each in terms of turnover across the business. We operate throughout Kent, the South East, up into London. We have a regional office in Verney Junction in Buckinghamshire. So pretty much anywhere from sort of Birmingham down is our main area of work, but we have worked in places like Scotland, Blackpool, Scarborough, so forth, mainly on the rail stuff. But yeah, I mean, very, very busy at the moment. Work continues to come in. You know, no complaints on that front. We're very lucky in this economic climate.
Yeah. So just give us a flavour, Steve, for the types of projects you're involved with at the moment. I live in Ramsgate, and I know there is I think it's a Red Row new housing development going on the approach to Manston, and you're doing the roadworks there. You're also building some new road infrastructure around Sheldon in Deal, which I'm sort of seeing every day. Is sort of housing development and construction, is that a sort of a mainstay of what you're doing at the moment?
Yeah, a lot of the civil side of our business is for the big house builders. You know, you mentioned Red Row as one of those. We tend to do what they call the Section 278 works, which is the on-highway works for a lot of these big developers. And at the moment, Red Rose, Barrett's, Wimpy, those sort of people are doing a lot in Kent. we're not really seeing any signs of a slowdown on them. Some of the smaller housing developers are slowing down a bit, but we, you know, we're very fortunate that we work for most of them, and that and local authority work is really where the majority of our civil stuff comes in the Kent area.
So on a local authority level, what's going on in that space at the moment?
Well, with local authority stuff, it tends to be some of the larger schemes where they might be putting a new road in, or there's a new main sewer going in, or so forth. Mm-hmm. You know, the vast majority of what we do, one way or another, is government funded. Probably about 70% of the work we do, and this is why slowdowns tend to affect us later than when it's happening, because the money has already been committed.
Yeah.
So what's happening is money's not being committed now for the projects in 2 or 3 years' time.
Yeah.
So we always find slowdowns have a delayed effect with us, as it did through the pandemic.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. I was reading an article at the weekend about why we've got such stubbornly high inflation, and it was really pointing the finger at government in terms of the level of spending from central government that's obviously, you know, being filtered down to local authorities through UK Shared Prosperity Fund, levelling up, all that kind of activity, and actually keeping the economy, you know, relatively buoyant on that level, and therefore, you know, keeping inflation up at the same time. So that's a really interesting point you've made there, Steve. I'd like to bring Pamela in now, if we can. So Pamela's obviously the HR manager at Walkers. Pamela, let's talk about, you know, some of the problems in terms of kind of resourcing all of this kind of buoyant construction sector at the moment. Because I know you're continually looking out for people, you know, to kind of bring into the business. Steve mentioned you employ 170 people at Walker Construction. So, you know, what are the challenges from your point of view in terms of, you know, making sure that you've got the bodies on the ground, if you like, to deliver all of these fabulous projects?
Yeah, I mean, recruitment is always a bit of a challenge, to be perfectly honest, and even more so with the changes, obviously, with the EU and the pandemic. So actually, there is a shortage of labour and a shortage of skilled labour as well. And I know we've spoken previously around also there's an ageing workforce, and are seeing actually the new skills and the youngsters coming through. So that's one of the challenges. However, we are almost at the point with our apprenticeships for this year. So we've gone through advertising, interviewing, and we're at the final selection stage now. So there's some good signs there of people wanting to get into construction.
Good.
The other side of that is obviously we're always very keen to get more women in construction. This perception of actually just being out on site and getting cold and wet and dirty. There's so much more that goes on behind the scenes, so we're always keen to hear from people who want to be involved in the business.
Well, you're a good example of that, aren't you? You know, you're in charge of all these burly men that are out in the field, as it were.
Yeah.
But as you say, it's a very kind of broad sector in terms of kind of job skill set, isn't it? You know, everything from marketing, and you employ another marketing person, don't you, Charlotte? You know, in the team. So it is quite broad ranging, and I think, you know, I guess for you, one of the challenges is you know, helping young people understand that, you know, construction doesn't mean you know, wearing a high-vis jacket and digging a hole at the side of the road necessarily.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much more that goes on before we even get to that point with a site even starting. So, you know, right from tendering, estimating, you know, we have our quantity surveyors, health and safety, you know, there's a whole raft of other departments and roles that go on behind the scenes.
Steve, you wanted to say something on that?
Yeah, well, just the point you was making about not everything's about digging holes. I mean, the reality is, of those 170 people we employ, only about 55-60 of them are site-based. The rest are all in some form of management or office role. So the vast majority of the people we employ aren't actually out on the ground, because we subcontract a lot of stuff out. So, you know, it really is important that the youngsters get to understand the opportunities that are available, because we do have issues. I mean, Pamela mentioned the apprenticeship scheme. I mean, last year it was a dismal failure, our apprenticeship scheme. We just could not get the people to come, and the ones we did turned out not to be interested and it didn't work for them. Yeah. So, yeah, we've had more success this year, but we need more.
Right.
And we need young people in the industry.
What's made the difference this year, Pamela? Why have you been successful this year and not last year?
I think some of it is that we've got ahead of the game. We've done a lot more planning around actually what we're looking for, researching some of the courses, and as I say, advertising well in advance. So we've made sure that we're ready.
Mm.
Some of it is through word of mouth as well. You know, as with our employees, people get to, you know, the staff get to hear about our apprenticeship programs, so they're talking to the, you know, family and friends. So there's an element of that. We advertise well, so that has helped massively.
Mm. In terms of thinking about this summer, we're about to sort of have the school holidays. I remember working on a building site during my school holidays when I went to university. Are there roles at the moment that perhaps people listening in are thinking, oh, you know, what are we going to do with Henry or Charlotte or whoever, this summer? It'd be nice for them to get some work experience. Is there anything that where you could slot people into at Walkers this summer for work experience,
for example? Most definitely, this is now the time for work experience. And we've got, I think, even three or four people that are joining us through this month and into August as well, where schools are actively looking for placements for their students. So again, we every year annually, we will have work placements and youngsters coming through. And that obviously gives them not only an insight into construction, but also an insight into the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
And quite often that then leads on to when we open up our apprenticeship program, they've already had an element of experience with us.
What a great idea. So can people listening get in touch with you directly on that level? Or does it have to be done through school?
No, there's a number of ways. Obviously, mm-hmm. they can get through to me directly. We also have via our website, there's a link on there around careers, also just getting in touch.
Yeah.
So yeah, by all means, if there's anybody out there that's listening that wants to discuss opportunities or just
how
understand
exciting.
What roles are out there, then by all means, you know, get in contact.
Brilliant. So just give us a quick shout out for your website if you can.
Yeah, it's www.walker-construction.co.uk.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Great. Well, look, do stay with us, Steve and Pamela. When we come back, I'd like to talk about the other side of your business, which is, the Walker Trust that you've set up as well, and also what you're doing in terms of sustainability, social value, all of those kind of other key touch points as well. So do stay with us. We're going to play a little bit of music, and we'll be right back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back again, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning into the Biz Connect radio show today. As we've were saying before the break, we've got a packed studio of guests with us today. We've got Steve Walker and Pamela Branchett from Walker Construction, and also Chris Wilson from Syncline Solutions. So great to have you all with us today. Thanks for coming, guys. Steve and Pamela, we were talking before the break about some of the constraints in the labour market at the moment, and the work that you're doing to kind of combat that in terms of apprenticeships and work experience as well. So, you know, people listening, might be thinking about picking up the phone to Walker Construction to get some work experience for their kids this summer. But I want to move the conversation on now, if we can, to talk about the work that you also do in the charity space, and in particular through the Walker Construction Charitable Trust that you've set up. So, Steve, just tell us how that came about, please, and how you ultimately put that money to good use in the community.
Yeah, well, we set the trust up in December 2019, excuse me, and really it was predominantly so that we could have a cradle to grave view on what was happening with the money. You know, the trust is our staff's trust. They put on the events to raise the money. The money is put into the trust. The trust makes the donations to the good causes. But we wanted to be able to see what that money was actually being used for. So rather than it going into a big pot, you know, whether it's buying a wheelchair, whether it's paying for training, whether it's paying for counselling, You know, we've got one coming up this week where we're supporting some poorly animals. And it's so that we can say to our staff, you raised this money, this is what it was used for, and we follow it through and make sure that it's used.
Yeah.
And the other thing is we wanted to take all the admin costs out. So the company pays all the admin costs of running the trust. So every single penny we raise, which is over £100,000 to date, is donated. So there's nothing comes out of it whatsoever.
So why was it set up originally? How did it come about? Was it just through recognition that you had an opportunity to raise money and actually, you know, put some value back into the local community on that basis? Or
several reasons. The main one was we used to donate to various charities, and it just became apparent to me that we had no real accountability of what that money was being used for. And, you know, I appreciate it costs money to run charities, there are admin costs, but, you know, we thought if the staff are putting on events, we wanted there to really be accountability, and we wanted to be more hands-on, and we wanted to have a choice in what we was doing and what we were supporting.
Yeah.
You know, we've supported probably 50 or 60 different charities since 2009, good causes since 2019, including through the pandemic. You know, and as I say, we've raised now over £100,000. And, you know, when you go to these individuals and you give these awards, sometimes it might be £200 or £300 or as much as £2,000 or £3,000. But the difference that makes, you know, that's the rewarding factor that we get.
That's a really good point you made there. I remember back in, you know, when I used to work in the corporate world, I was, you know, always getting emails or phone calls from people. Can you donate this? Can you do that? And as you say, you can't do everything. And it's very, it was actually quite fragmented, and you didn't really know what to support, you know, when to support, how to support. And so I guess ultimately, you know, having control over all of that, you know, is an ideal kind of solution there. How do you actually take, you know, inquiries from people that are looking for donations, you know, for their local charity work? How does that actually sort of materialise and happen?
Well, we're quite proactive in advertising that the trust is there and available. It's very, very easy to apply. You go onto the Walker Construction website, there's a button linking you to the trust. You go on, there's a one-page, very simple application form. When you get to the bottom of that form, it will tell you if you fall within the qualification criteria or not. If you do, that goes forward to the trust committee. The trust committee will make a decision. They will put it forward to the trustees for approval, and sometimes in as quick as 48 hours we can get the money to where it's needed. I mean, some take longer. We do say up to 4 months depending on the type of application it is, but we, you know, we really do try and get things and turn around quickly so we can get the money to where it's needed.
And is it by and large local projects in the local community in and around Folkestone and Hythe? Or, I mean, obviously you're a national business, do you go further afield?
Yeah, what we say is it's the areas, it's local communities where we're based and where we work in. So if we've got a big project, you know, I don't know, say for example in Portsmouth, and there's a local good cause there, and we're going to be down there working for a year or 18 months, creating mayhem with our cones in the road or whatever. then obviously if there's something there that needs support, we do. But the ironic thing is we get periods where we lack applications.
Right.
For funding, and yet we've got this funding there to give out.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, that brings me nicely on to another sort of very hot topic at the moment, particularly in the sort of public sector procurement space, and that's social value and the social value economy. And I was on a social value conference the week before last, and they were talking about the social value economy and the increasing focus and accountability for public procurement monies in terms of, you know, local economy, local community, local environment, and the trust is a really good example of that. But Steve, I was just keen to sort of get your take in terms of, you know, how you, as a construction firm, are being held to account already in that space in terms of demonstrating the additional value add, if you like, that working on a project in a particular local authority can deliver.
Yeah, well, obviously, there's some of that already built into the contract. When you get the tenders come out now, the local authority will put in there certain requests that you've got to do, and in some cases that is paying for some public things. You know, they might want a road altered to accommodate a school or something, and there's capital contributions have to go. Obviously, there's a considerate constructors scheme, which we have to abide to on a lot of projects, again, which is all around the social and how you work with your local communities. But we're finding more and more as a business that we are getting asked to put more in now to these projects. And that's only going to continue, and quite rightly so. We cause a lot of disruption when we're in an area, and you know, we need to keep the local communities on side and appreciate what they're doing.
Pamela, you wanted to come in.
Yeah, just to add to that, obviously we spoke about recruitment earlier. Again, as Steve mentioned, when we're tendering for some of this work, one of the criteria may well be that we employ local labour. So actually involving the community in how they can support and work with us on that. Also about involving the community in making some of those decisions. And volunteering has also been another thing. So again, getting people within that community to work with us so that actually we're making the right decisions for what they actually need in their area.
And I guess, Steve, also it's on a fundamental level, you know, local supply chain, local subcontractors, for example, that can deliver the project.
Very much so. And again, that's quite often written into tenders nowadays, that you have to use so much local, which we always try and do, because obviously that comes on to affecting carbon footprint and so forth with travelling of the materials.
Well, you mentioned that, carbon footprint and sustainability. I know you guys are very proactive in that space as well. So, Pamela, tell us about some of the work that you've been doing in terms of understanding your carbon footprint and creating a carbon reduction plan there. What's been the sort of first step for you, really?
Yeah, well, the first step was that is kind of understanding where we are. We knew that we were doing a lot of things already behind the scenes, but actually it was about pulling all of this information and data together. So our first port of call was obviously to undertake an audit, which you kindly have been helping us with, to feed some of our data into that, whether it be carbon emissions, our fuel usage, our electricity that we're using in our offices, and so on and so forth. Procurement, as we've said, is another big area that we need to look at, and our subcontractors. So so we've now got a base, if you like, for where we're currently sat. We now, the challenges are, and it's only through starting to work through some of this, that all the different elements that make up the carbon footprint. So there's a lot of education that's required as well, and from an employer and our employees perspective, it's about downloading and sharing all of that information. And and again, I know we've spoken before about actually if everybody did their own little bit, then collectively the results will happen.
So as you say, massive undertaking. I mean, the materials that you're consuming, understanding, you know, what your subcontractor's carbon footprint looks like, that whole sort of scope three emissions kind of understanding is huge, isn't it? But you know, you've started that that journey, you know, and ultimately I think, you know, businesses will be more and more accountable for delivering against that.
And
so well done.
We're still learning as well, Martin, you know.
Of course.
Each time we go to another meeting or we meet another company, you know, they're all doing different things. We're doing different things. You come out with fresh ideas. Companies now are launching products, as we know. Last week we met a company in terms of refurbishing and replacing things as opposed to buying brand new. So, again, that's another thing to think about when you're coming to purchase something. Actually, is there an alternative?
Brilliant. Well, look, we've come to the end of the interview. Just give us a final shout out for the Walker Construction website, if you can, and for how people can get in touch with you potentially, you know, with a view to you know, a work placement this summer or a longer term, you know, career opportunity, whether it be an apprenticeship or perhaps coming in as a skilled, semi-skilled person.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. So, as mentioned before, that our website is www.walker-construction.co.uk, and not only for recruitment, but also, as Steve mentioned, there's access to applying for the trust on
the
there.
Trust.
So, make your applications to us also.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Pamela and Steve, for coming into the studio today. Fantastic insight, as always, talking to you guys. We're going to play a little bit of music, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Chris at Syncline Solutions. So do stay with us. We'll be right back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
BizConnect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back to the second part of the BizConnect radio show today, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in. We've been talking with Pamela Branchett and Steve Walker from Walker Construction. And now I'd like to invite our second guest to join us today. And that is Chris Wilson from Syncline Solutions. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much for having me, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great to have you. Chris, I know that Syncline Solutions have its roots as a family business as well, in the same way that Walker Construction do. So just paint a picture for us, please, if you can, in terms of how the business came about and what you guys do, please.
Fantastic. So we are a perimeter security business, and we work on the likes of automatic gates, doors, barriers, etc., etc., etc. That list could be going on for forever and a day. We originally came about, so it's we're a small family business, and my late grandfather, he was a mining prospector, so he used to go all around the country and he would prospect for coal, and he would sell those reports off to big mining companies. The name of that company, funnily enough, was Syncline Solutions. He then retired, and my father worked for a big automatic gate and fencing supplier doing automatic gates. He then left there and worked for a decade at the largest automatic door company in the country. So again, you can see how this is piecing together. he made the decision to go self-employed and was looking around for a name. So to kind of pay homage to his late father, he picked the name Syncline Solutions, which is, it's a marvellous name, but only if you know where the story comes
from.
I must say, if I had a pound for every time I had to spell Syncline out to somebody over the phone, I'd be sitting in Barbados right now.
And now you're at the reins.
Yeah.
I mean, I know your job title is contracts manager, but obviously you're much more than that in terms of the kind of the day-to-day of the business. But, you know, talking about the kind of installation and projects that you work on, give us a flavour for some of the clients that you work with and the types of solutions that you've implemented for them.
Absolutely. So you know I love a name drop, Martin. You know I love a name drop. So we look after, we're in a variety of sectors. We're focusing at the minute on defence. That's like the road blockers, which are the big wedges that come out of the ground to stop vehicles.
Right.
The recent passing of Martin's Law, which some people may be familiar with, it's kind of pushing the onus back at event organisers and people that operate sites on protecting people, passengers, the public, basically, from vehicle-borne attacks.
Ah.
So we're doing a lot of work around that. We work in a lot of schools, universities. We're all over the place.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that you see more and more of every day now, isn't it? I mean, I work on a gated business park in Sandwich. You've been to my office before. That never used to be a gated business park. It was open. So are we becoming, do you think, more sort of generally more security conscious? Why do people need to protect their premises today in a way that perhaps they didn't need to in the past?
Yeah, I think we definitely, I mean, you only have to look at the news, you know, turn on the news today and you look over at France and you think, how far away could any society be away from that, given a series of unfortunate events?
Yeah.
But also looking more closely at, say, your site, I think a lot of people want to know who's coming in and, like, to and from their site.
Mm.
They want to know times. They want to know what times their staff are getting in and leaving, see if that tallies up with the overtime that they're putting in at the end of the week.
Yeah. I'm sure there is an element of kind of big brother there, isn't there?
Yeah, in terms of a little bit. I don't think it's as sadistic as some people make out, but largely we've got, you might not have people coming in to steal things per se, but a lot of people will come in and case. We're having a lot of that at university campuses and stuff. You'll have people coming in and innocently looking around per se, and then next thing you know, that AC unit that they were looking at 2 weeks ago has disappeared. It's just about people protecting their plant and also the people on their site.
Yeah, and Wimbledon were in the news this morning talking about their increased security presence, for the championships, which start today. I mean, it's everything from, you know, Just Stop Oil protesters through to people that are looking to perhaps, you know, steal property, and capital goods as well, isn't it? It's quite broad-ranging. So, Chris, tell us about, how a conversation with yourselves would come about. I mean, how do I decide, A, that I need to protect my site, perhaps? And you know, how do I then have a conversation about, you know, what it is that I need to kind of create in order to provide a security barrier there? How does that conversation even start?
Absolutely. I mean, unfortunately, I think a lot of people come to me once the event has happened.
Right.
You know, not necessarily me, it could be another company like us, but if you're having doubts or concerns or you think that there's a security vulnerability, just get in touch with somebody and just, because they'll be able to close that loophole for a fraction of the cost it was, versus what it would be if that kit was lost, stolen, or somebody was hurt.
So it's a bit of a knee-jerk reaction quite often in terms of, you know, something's happened. You know, we saw somebody on a CCTV system having a look round, or actually we had a break-in and now we need to do something about it.
Yeah, exactly that. So I would just advise getting in touch. I mean, you can do that via our website at www.synclinesolutions.com.
Okay.
I could spell that out, but you know, I don't want to put another pound in the pot.
So how does, you know, so somebody gets in touch with you, what, you know, do you do a site audit? I mean, and then kind of come up with, actually, I think what you need is this, or do they have a sort of something kind of fixed in their mind already? You know, how does the process actually work?
A lot of people do have an idea in their mind, but I think it's always important for you to come down and have a look at the site,
because
you can quite clearly point out the vulnerabilities. And then the next most important question, and a lot of people, it's a bit of a taboo subject, but the next question is budget, because, you know, if I come to you and you say, I've got a budget of £30, I want all this doing, then unfortunately that's not the case. If you've got a massive amount of money and you do want to spend it all, then you could put something state of the art, but generally speaking, you come up with a solution that's appropriate for the site, the risk, and the budget.
Yeah. And you as a business, you do that design service as well as the actual build, if you like, for want of a better word, as well. And you don't subcontract. You have all of that expertise in-house. Is that right?
Yeah. So we are 100% in-house company. We think it's just, it works better that way. We all know where each other are. There's never an element of somebody gets an offer of more money elsewhere and he doesn't turn up on that day because this is their job and this is where they are.
Yeah.
So everyone's reliable. And I think in our line of work, you need that reliability. You need to know that someone's going to be there as and when you need them.
Yeah. And Steve, just bringing you into the conversation, because obviously you rely on subcontractors to ultimately carry out works on projects up and down the country. What is it that you're looking for in a subcontractor when you engage them on a project? What are the key kind of things that you're tuned into there?
Well, we have an approved list, and every subcontractor has to come onto that approved list. So that'll include checks being done for them for financial reasons, insurance. We'll look at their past history in regards to the projects they've delivered and so forth. And very often we'll get to know the people first. And once they're on the list, then it's a case of they'll be sent out the various projects to tender when they become available. But it's very, very important for us is reliability, number one, quality, number two, and obviously always price.
Yeah, fantastic, good. And Chris, do you tend to, does most of your work reside in the kind of public sector, or is it with kind of private businesses? You know, what's the kind of mix there? Because Steve was talking about, you know, public sector procurement being quite fundamental for their business. Are you seeing an increase in that as well?
Yeah, it's a good mix of both for us. I think, like, obviously we're purely commercial, which is worth noting. But we do a lot of work in defence, and we do a lot of work for the likes of universities and schools and colleges and stuff. And tying into what Steve and Pam were talking about earlier is we're seeing an increasing requirement for social value, namely the carbon audit, which again we're doing with yourself at the minute, which has been, it's quite phenomenal really, just to go through and see what you're using, where you're using it. And I think there's something that kind of scared us off in the beginning was the kind of people that we work with, being big steel manufacturers and stuff, this isn't a subject that they're well versed in, nor do they seem particularly willing to work on at sometimes. But it's not about, you know, it's not about increasing costs to provide this. It's about giving people the option to save on carbon in their projects. And that's something that our university clients have absolutely loved.
I bet. Yeah, it's good to hear. Good. Well, look, I think we're going to play a little bit more music. When we come back, we've got about 5 minutes left of the show. And Chris, I want to talk about the other side, you know, servicing and maintenance and looking after clients, you know, once you've implemented a security solution for them. So do stay with us, and we'll be right back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
BizConnect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back to the final part of our show today, everybody. Before the break, we were talking with Chris Wilson at Syncline Solutions all about security barriers and making sites, business sites, secure. Chris, you've picked up some pretty high-profile clients recently. I know you're working with Twickenham and the Emirates. So tell us a little bit about that. How did that come about?
Oh, come on, Martin. You know I don't like to brag. So we took on all of a big tier one building contractors Stadia portfolio in London, following our success at Battersea Power Station, another name drop. So they'd had, with a lot of these sites, they have a lot of contractors in trying to address problems, and they simply either can't get to the bottom of it or the solution is to replace.
Mm-hmm.
And in this day and age, you can't just come in and go, that needs to be replaced. So we like to think that we're at the top of the game when it comes to fixing things. One of our clients recently said they were asked by their boss, who are Syncline? And she replied with, if it can be fixed, these guys will fix it.
Mm, brilliant.
And that will be going up on the website soon.
nice quote.
So yeah, we took on, we were invited to Twickenham Stadium to uh-huh. come and have a look round. We've recently signed the contract there, so we'll be taking on all their automatic assets on site.
Uh-huh.
The same with the Emirates. We look after all their crash-rated road blockers and bollards. So, again, tying into Martin's Law and keeping people safe. But
brilliant.
It's going very well.
Now, you mentioned the word look after. Now, that implies to me that it's not a case of, you know, turning up, implementing a road blocker solution and then walking away. There's some sort of ongoing maintenance contract involved in that as well, presumably.
Yes.
So tell us about that side of the business.
Yeah, so, I mean, when we talk about maintenance, the thing that I often say to our clients is you don't just go and buy a new Mercedes.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously you've got your MOTs and all that sort of stuff. You don't just buy it and just leave it sat there
because
mm-hmm. it'll quickly return to the earth.
Yeah. You change the oil once in a while.
Do you?
Oh, maybe the tyres.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to put a bit of TLC into these things, and automatic assets are much the same.
Yeah.
A lot of these assets cost a lot of money. You know, we're talking some of these things are in the region of £100,000 to £250,000. So you want to be investing a bit of money and looking after them so that they last for the projected lifespan.
Yeah.
We end up in we look after. My choice term, all the roadblockers at the Emirates. So they'll have us come in. They've got to keep all the players, all the staff, the site, and the public safe.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine these things have to be running like clockwork all the time. And that's where we step in. So we mm-hmm. come in on a 6-monthly basis. We perform maintenance, all these stuff, and just make sure it runs as it should.
And I guess they get, you know, roadblockers get damaged ultimately, don't they? It's they either go through the bottom of people's cars or people drive into them when they're not fully down.
Yeah, no, they're an exciting asset to work with, let's put it that way.
Yeah, fantastic. And what happens in a sort of an emergency call-out situation? I mean, I'm thinking about, in the office a couple of weeks ago, our security stopped working, and effectively people were trapped inside the building with no means of getting out because it's all automatic entry and exit systems, you know, using a swipe card. So, I mean, that's quite a serious thing, you know, if there was a fire or something like that. So what happens in that kind of scenario? Is there an emergency call-out kind of option with you guys?
Yeah, so we typically work on a 4-hour emergency call-out, which is a key component of all of our maintenance contracts. With your specific site and that query, there should be an automatic breakout. So you should be able to just push a door in the likes of automatic doors, even if the access has failed as a power cut. You should be able to push that door open. Because obviously in the event of a fire, you want people to be able to get out. You don't want them loitering around at the door phoning for 4-hour emergency call-outs.
You were actually there on the day, weren't you?
I was.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, if they're looking for a security provider that can keep things working as they should, perhaps they should be getting in touch.
So the emergency call-out is sort of mainstay of what you offer, really, as part of the service contract.
It's a last resort, to be honest, Martin, because as much as we are in business, we're not in business to make every single penny that we can. Being a small family business, we do care about people. We understand that there's no bottomless pit of money that there seemingly was 5-10 years ago.
Yeah.
So if I can help you over the phone make safe or put it into manual so that I can come there the day later, it drastically reduces the cost.
Yeah.
and it, you know, it lets the guys enjoy their dinner.
Yeah. Well, you made another interesting point there. I guess a lot of this is remote manageable now.
Yeah.
Over a PC, you can dial into a security system remotely and diagnose and fix problems that way, I guess, can't
yeah,
you,
so
as
a
well?
A lot of the access stuff and a lot of the CCTV stuff can be done remotely, but obviously the likes of gates, doors and blockers, they're not going anywhere. There's no addressing them from home.
No, of course. No, fair enough. So, Chris, just give us a final shout-out, if you can, for the website and how people can get in touch with you.
Yeah, so if you want to get in touch with us, it's www.syncline.com, which is S-Y-N-C-L-I-N-E, another pound in the pot, solutions.com. Or just have a look on our website, and there's a contact number there for the office or myself.
Brilliant. To get in touch. And some examples of the types of work that you do, obviously, as well. Great. Well, we have come to the end of the show today. So thank you to all our guests, Steve Walker and Pamela Branchett from Walker Construction, and Chris Wilson from Syncline Solutions. Thank you for being in the studio with me today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
As I say, it is our last show on this particular station, so do keep in touch with us via our website at kentbizconnect.co.uk, and hopefully we will be resident on another station towards the end of the summer. But for now, all that remains to do is for me to say thank you so much for tuning in over the years and our many, many shows and guests. And we'll be with you again on the airwaves soon. So bye for now.
105.9 Academy FM Folkestone.
BizConnect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.